Good morning, friends. Good morning, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us. Good morning, Lou.
Good morning. Good to see you. I'm anxious to keep going here.
Yeah. I miss you when I don't see you for a while.
I know. And like I said, I'm anxious to get going. We're getting into some good stuff right now. That chapter, that verse 16 piece, and people who haven't seen it, go check out the podcast. If you're listening to our podcast, go on Facebook at the Gita Memoirs of a Psychiatrist. Check out episode 18, which was verse 16 in chapter 2.
Do you like that one? Huh?
I do. I'd like that one. That's deep.
Wait till you get to verse 22 then.
Okay, great. All right.
Good. There's so many more to follow. Anyway, today we are going to be talking about verses 20 through 25. Now, as we've said before, and this bears repetition, folks, because every time you hear it, every time you read it, you get a little bit more. You right. cannot get enough of this every time. This is like an onion that you just keep peeling and peeling and right. peeling, and you never seem to get to the end. At least with an onion, you get to some point. But here, there's deeper and deeper. Every word in the Gita has deep, deep, deep meanings. We are actually going through only the very most superficial layer of this, of these teachings mm-hmm. right now. And as I said, these things have been passed on for generations. They just keep coming down from thousands of years ago, from thousands of sages, and is passed on. And I got this education first from Gautam Jain. Sorry?
No, I was thinking, Doctor, while you were saying this, it must be true that you get told a principle, like we went through chapter one and we're going through chapter two now, and you get a principle presented to you. But then you get to chapter 3 and chapter 4, and you have another tool to go back and look at chapter 1 and understand it on a different level.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, as your intellect gets stronger, you right. can understand the philosophy. Now, some really high-flown, very, very great, deep philosophers, when they start talking about these same verses, like you asked me something about eternal, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And when you start talking about hearing them talk about time and what that means, infinity, eternal, it just goes straight over your head. You have no idea what they're talking about.
Right.
But we're just talking about saying eternal means it lasts forever. But when they say, well, what is forever? When did it start? When did it end? When
right.
will it end?
Yes.
It's just too much. But you're right. Every time you come deeper and deeper because your intellect gets stronger. So verse 20. Verse 20 says, this is not born, nor does it die, nor having been will ever again cease to be. This is unborn, eternal, changeless, ancient. It is not killed when the body is killed. So each one of these words is important, but we won't go through every one of them, because otherwise we'll be here forever.
Right. And we're referring to the Atman, right? Chapter 2 is dealing with the Atman.
That's right. From verse 11 to verse 25, Krishna in the Gita talks basically about the Atman. And essentially, somebody I was talking to the other day, he was in Germany, he was texting me, and he said, well, this happens on the battlefield. Isn't he talking about X or Y? And I said, yeah, it happens on the battlefield, but all of this is symbolic. Mm-hmm. This is all meant for us. I mean, if you were to imagine, Lou, that there was a real battle going on,
right.
two armies facing each other, itching to go, the bugles have sounded, that the war has started, and then Arjuna says, nah, tell me this story, and Krishna starts telling him 700 verses.
Yeah.
You mean this? It doesn't happen like that.
So you guys just wait over there. I got to go through this. I'll be with you in a second.
Right. So this is talking about the Atman, which is not born, doesn't die, never having been, will never again cease to be, unborn, eternal, changeless, ancient. What does that mean? Basically, it's setting the stage for chapters 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way to the end to explain to us who we are, what we are. These basics are very important for us to know.
Yes.
The basics, because unless you understand the basics of what is the body, what is the mind, what is the intellect, what are vasanas, what is the Atman, it's hard to understand how to change your life. So unborn means it wasn't born the way I was born, you were born, all of us are born. This always was, it always will be. It's
right.
infinite.
No beginning, no end.
No beginning, no end. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to fathom for us right now.
Right.
And that's one of the things that the Gita says, that when you start to talk about the Atman, it is not something that your mind can understand, that your intellect can fathom.
Right.
It's not something that your eyes, your ears, your mouth, your tongue, anything can actually come to grasp with. This is the only way to understand the Atman is to become the Atman. You cannot understand it. So somebody says, well, how is it that the Atman was never born? How is it that it will always be? That I don't understand that. You can't understand it.
Right.
It's something you will only become. Eternal. Imagine that, and all these examples have a limit. You can't expect the examples to go on explaining every part of it. But for the general portion, if you, I, all living things are like the waves in an ocean, the waves come and go, mm-hmm. but the ocean continues forever. So eternal means that the Atman is all-pervading, it's everywhere. Each one of us is like a little wave coming out of that Atman. We exist for a short while, then we disappear, but the Atman continues forever. Changeless is the Atman. The body changes, the mind changes, the intellect changes. In fact, those of you who have heard Deepak Chopra talk know that the body changes every second.
Yes.
Cells are changing, and we change from 1 minute to the next. The body's never the same. The mind changes. The intellect changes. You say, oh, my goodness, 10 years ago, I could remember all these names. Now I don't remember.
Right.
The intellect changes. You are born, you live, you die. But the Atman never changes. So Gautam Jain gives this example, and Swami Parthasarathy does, that when morning exists, when morning dies, afternoon is born.
Mm-hmm.
Afternoon goes on. Afternoon dies, evening begins, is born.
Yes.
Evening dies, nighttime is born. In the process of this, the day occurs.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're a child, childhood dies, adolescence begins, adolescence dies, adulthood begins, adulthood dies, middle age begins. And in the process, in this process, the chain of birth and death, change occurs. So this is Atman is changeless. Since it is never born and it never dies, it is changeless.
Right.
But we change. Everything else in the world except for the Atman changes. So that's an important point. Now, he talks of time in terms of eternal. And I think I mentioned this before, that to measure distance, you have to go from one point to the next point, point A to point B. If you don't have a point B, you don't have any distance.
Right.
Similarly with time, you have to have one experience, and then you have to have a second experience to have a time period.
Right.
The distance between the first experience and the second experience is time.
Right.
That's why they say that you call it a second,
yeah.
because of the second experience.
Yeah, we got that in the last episode. I like that.
Yeah. Okay, so that was verse 20. Verse 21 says, he who knows this, and remember, Lou, that we said that from verse 11 to verse 25, 14 verses, he just keeps talking about the same thing over and over again.
Right.
Most of us say, well, it's the same thing. But those who know higher and those higher philosophies will show you subtle differences between verse 1 and verse 2, verse 2 and verse 3. And those subtle differences have great meanings. But we will come to that at some other point. So verse 21 says, he who knows this to be indestructible, eternal, unborn, immutable. How can that man slay anyone or cause anyone to be slain? So what he's saying in general and very basic terms, and the most superficial layer of the onion, is that if you imagine that you have a big pile of clay, and you take that clay and you make it into a pot,
right.
that clay has now become a pot. The clay, if you destroy the clay, the pot gets destroyed. But if you destroy the pot, you break the pot doesn't destroy the clay. The pot becomes clay again.
Right.
So there's a cause and an effect. The effect cannot affect the cause. The cause can affect the effect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So gold. You have a pile of gold, and you break that, chisel it, break it down, and you make jewelry out of it.
Correct, yep.
You can break the jewelry and make it gold again, but you cannot break the gold to make jewelry again.
Right.
So we are human beings, men, Atman. What Krishna is saying is, how can a man destroy Atman? Atman cannot be destroyed, so you can't. You have no issue. But if you are a man, you cannot destroy Atman. If you kill somebody, that's what he's basically talking about, is if you are afraid of killing these people that you have to go to war with,
right,
you cannot think like that, because you may be killing this person who is very bad, but his Atman lives on forever. Which brings up another point, by the way.
That was Arjuna's big conflict that sparked this conversation.
Yeah. Arjuna's big conflict, basically something that comes up frequently with people that I'm talking about. People ask questions and they say, well, the Gita is a very violent book, isn't it? It talks about terrorism and it talks about killing. It tells Krishna, tells Arjuna to kill. What kind of God is this?
Right.
First of all, we have to remember that this was at least 5,000 years ago. At that time, when a warrior took on the profession of being a warrior, his whole families were warriors. The greatest shame was to run away from a battle.
Right.
You were born to learn to fight and to defend your kingdom whenever necessary. You didn't become a king and then a warrior and then say, I don't feel like fighting this battle. I don't feel like killing those guys. That was never a question. That was cowardice. Right. You were banned from society if you did that. That was one thing. The second thing is, imagine in our own lives that you have a relative in your family that has become a, what is it called, a SWAT commander.
SWAT member, yeah.
SWAT member. Yep. He's got a SWAT team, and he's a highly decorated SWAT team guy. And he says, you know, by the way, Lou, you know those cousins I have? Those are really, I didn't realize that my cousins, Aunt Margie's children, they're really bad.
Right.
And I know that. For my whole life, I've recognized that Aunt Margie's kids, my cousins, are really bad. And that's what Arjuna says about his cousin.
Right.
For years, for 13, 14 years, he said, these cousins, the Kauravas, are really bad for the country, and they need to be eliminated. He contemplated this. He thought about it. Says, you know, there's no question. He negotiated with them. He asked them for all kinds of things, and the Kauravas refused. They said, we are stronger than you. We are not going to negotiate. Now, this SWAT team commander says, hey, I just found out that Aunt Margie's sons are all terrorists.
Yeah.
And they're going to bomb something like 9/11. They're going to do something. I'm a SWAT team commander. I'm going there. And he sees his cousins lined up in front of him and says, yeah, these are my cousins after all. I got to put down my weapons.
Right.
You'd say, no. Yes, they're your cousins, but they're terrorists. They're planning to blow up this building. No, they're my cousins. I can't.
Right.
That's when Krishna comes and says, and it's used basically as a symbolic way to teach people, not just about terrorism or killing or war, but also people who grieve, also people who think bad about, you know, people that die. So this all leads to something, and that's why this whole thing came about. So that's why from verse 11 to verse 25, he talks about the Atman in great detail so that you understand what the Atman is all about. So we did 20 and 21. Now comes 22. This is one of the many verses of the Gita that is oft mentioned, that is talked about a lot. Atma Tattva means nature of the self, and that's what this is talking about. Verse 22 says, just as a person gives up old clothes and puts on a new suit of clothes, so does the Atman give up a body. Another way of saying it is, just as a man casting off worn-out garments puts on new ones, so the Atman casts off worn-out bodies and enters new ones. Mm-hmm. So what that means is, people have this misconception that the soul is like a cloud inside a person. I've had people send me videos from WhatsApp that says they show a car accident or a motorcycle accident and a wisp of like smoke coming out of the body.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, is that the soul departing the body? And that's not what happens. First of all, it's not like an entity within us that the Atman is all pervading. It's all everywhere. There's not even one micro piece of space where Atman is not. Atman is everywhere. We are actually within the Atman. So when we die, the body just falls down. Atman remains everywhere. So the Atman doesn't leave us. What leaves our body is the mind. So what are we consisting of? We consist of the physical body, which is known as the gross body, our mind with which we think, we have feelings, we have emotions, we have fears, we have desires. And above that is the intellect with which we analyze. Should I do this? Should I do this? Is this good? Is this not good?
BMI, that's the intellect. Body, mind, and intellect.
Body, mind, and intellect. Yep. The part that dies and we discard like a set of worn clothes is the body. Mm-hmm. The mind remains and the intellect remains, and it goes into wherever it goes into in order to go to the next birth, the next body. So the mind we talked about, the intellect we talked about. Together, right. The mind and the intellect are known as the subtle body. That's something that we need to keep in mind, the subtle body.
Right.
Deeper than that, not higher than that, deeper than that is the causal body, and that is the vasanas. Some say that the vasanas are actually the seed of our personality. The vasanas, somebody asked me, are vasanas and desires the same? Yes, in a way, but the vasanas are the unmanifest desires. So desires actually manifest themselves. Vasanas are the seeds which produce the thoughts.
Right.
So in your...
And the thoughts lead to action.
Thoughts lead to actions. Yep. Thoughts lead to desires.
Yep.
And desires lead to actions.
Oh, thoughts lead to... Right, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So one thought, you wake up in the morning and say, I feel like, you know, let's say you have a vasana for food. Mm-hmm. Or you're a foodie. All you can think of all the time is food, food, food. That's a vasana too. You wake up and you say, I know my doctor said that I have diabetes, but I feel like eating a donut today.
Yeah.
Right? First thought that crossed your mind. Your intellect says, get the heck out of here. You're not thinking about food. You're not thinking about donut. You just get on the treadmill and start to exercise. Or the intellect says, yeah, do whatever you want. And the next thought says, okay, how about a walk over there? I'll walk to Dunkin' Donuts and I'll buy myself a donut.
Yes.
And walking is exercise. You're justifying it.
Right.
Walking is exercise, and I'll eat the donut. Yeah, it's a pretty long walk. Another thought, another thought, another thought, until it becomes uncontrollable and it becomes a desire. Mm-hmm. And you say, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to walk to Dunkin' Donuts. I'm going to buy myself a donut and eat it. So vasana is the unmanifest desire as a seed. It produces a thought, which produces a desire. Desire leads to action. So those are vasanas. The vasanas are known as the causal body. Some say it is because of the vasanas that we actually come to this earth in order to fulfill those vasanas. And when we die, those vasanas that were there from previous lives, plus the vasanas that you've accumulated in the current life, together force you to come back to earth another time to fulfill those vasanas. And the only way to break that cycle is to get rid of your desires and vasanas. And that's what the Gita is teaching us how to do.
I see. So that's the work we're doing here.
That's the work we're doing here. So when do you die? Some people say, well, you know, it's all written up there. Nothing's written up there. There's no book up there that says when you're going to die. Some people say God determines when you die. God doesn't determine. God is Atman. Brahman does not determine when you die. What determines when you die, surprisingly enough, is when your vasanas can no longer be fulfilled by this current body.
Yeah.
So when you're in this lifetime, when your body says, your mind says, your intellect says, I've given up hope, not my vasanas are now no longer being fulfilled, that's when you say, okay, it's ready, time for me to go, and you die.
Right.
So people say, well, what happens if you're in a elevator and the whole elevator crashes, you know?
Yep.
I didn't want to die, but everybody else may have wanted to. I will die too. So no, you will be the only one who will survive. If your vasanas were still being fulfilled, you will find that you have a miraculous escape and you don't die. Somebody, I forget who it was. I think it was Swami Vivekananda, but don't quote me on this. It was some self-realized person that was about to get into an elevator, and this was written up, and there were reporters with him, and he was about to get into the elevator, and he says, nah, let's take the next one. And he stepped back. And the next thing they heard, the elevator crashed, and the people died. And the elevator reporter said, how did you know? And later, he said very privately to somebody, but not in front of everybody, he says, to respect the people who died and their family, he says, as I stepped into the elevator, I saw the halo or aura around these people was all gone. Uh-huh. And self-realized people can actually see a halo or an aura around people. He said, it was all gone. It meant to me that these people, they had reached the point where their vasanas were no longer being met. They'd just given up. Mm. And since everybody there had no halo, he says, I figured I would step out of this elevator. I didn't know it was going to crash.
Yeah.
I just felt that I didn't want to be with these people. So when the subtle body and the causal body says, my vasanas are no longer being met, is when death occurs. As long as your vasanas are being met, the body keeps going. So there are three bodies, the physical gross body, the subtle body, the causal body. The subtle body is where you look inside. You have your thoughts, feelings, emotions, ideas, desires, and the intellect. The causal body is ignorance with veils around it. It's the seeds of the personality of the person. And the subtle and causal body together continue to the next body. So how that happens is a whole other story.
Right.
After one dies, the body falls off, just like when you cut your hair or you cut your nails, it falls off. But the mind and the intellect and the vasanas are somewhere, and that's a whole other story.
Right.
And then based on how many good deeds this person has done, what good karma has accomplished, it is given a choice of where it can be born again. And then it says, okay, I'll choose this family, this home. So the causal body and subtle body choose the next family. The Atman does not transmigrate. It doesn't go from one body to the next. Important thing for us to note. The Atman is always there in pervading everything.
Right.
Okay, I think we've covered. Oh, one last thing. This analogy of clothes is a good one,
yes.
Right? Because if you take the clothes that somebody's wearing, as long as I'm wearing it, it has some shape. As long as you're wearing your suit, your clothes, it has shape. You take this shirt off and you hold it, it has no shape. It just hangs.
Right.
The suit hangs. Similarly, the body, they say, without the subtle body and the causal body in it, has really no shape. Not like clothes. It's not like, you know, your body after you die. But all the shape that life gives it,
right.
The subtle body gives it, the causal body gives it some life, some shape, some sparkle in the eyes, some aura around you, all of that goes. That right. only comes from the Atman, the subtle body, and the causal body. So that's verse 22, a very, very important one that people keep talking about in India all the time. Verse 23, weapons do not cut it, fire does not burn it, water does not wet it, wind does not dry it. So you say, this is so childish. What the heck does this mean? It actually is talking about the fact that there are certain things more subtle than others, and the Atman is the subtlest of all.
Right.
One way of measuring subtle versus gross is which of our senses contact this thing,
right.
whatever it is.
Right.
So the Atman cannot be contacted by any of the senses. None of the senses can actually contact the Atman. You can only become the Atman. We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
So in the scriptures, the Gita also talks about five elements. Space, air, it differentiates between space and air. Space, air, fire, water, earth. In those five elements, space is the most subtle, earth is the grossest. So, for instance, you make, you make a something to pray to.
Right.
Because it's hard to pray just by closing your eyes and imagining nothing. because we tend to need something that our senses can cling onto.
Right.
Cling onto. So you, this earth, which is a stone, is the most gross. So in Mecca, they have a black stone, I am told.
Yes.
There are various murtis or idols made of stone. And stone is earth, which is the grossest of the five elements. Why? Because to some extent you can smell it.
Mm-hmm.
You can taste it.
Right.
You can see it. You can feel it. And you can, if you hit the stone
yes.
with a spoon versus you hit a piece of wood with a stone, it has a certain sound to it.
It can activate all of your senses.
It can activate all of your senses. Mm-hmm. So all five senses can contact stone. Water, only less than five can contact. Fire is another thing that is used as a symbol of praying to, but fire is contacted by even less senses than the stone.
Right.
And I forget exactly how many senses contact, but you can see it, you can hear it, you can cannot touch it.
Yeah.
So there's fewer of them.
Yep.
And space and air is the least, is the subtlest. So in this also, it says weapons do not cut it, which means that weapons are gross.
Yes.
And it, weapons are gross, the Atman is subtle, it cannot do it. Fire does not burn it. So it's even more subtle than fire. Water does not wet it. So water, again, it's the same four, five elements, but also because Atman, and this is the part that I'm saying is deeper than this, one thing way to say it is to say it's even subtler than water. That's where it doesn't wet it.
Right.
But the other way of looking at it is, in order for water to wet something, there has to be some pores, some holes, some gaps for the water to go into.
Right.
So if you have a blotting paper, do you know what blotting paper
is? Yeah, I think so, yes.
Yeah, it's paper. In the olden days, we used to use ink. Used to fill up the ink with a cartridge,
right.
And then we used to write, and if a little bit more ink came out, you'd take this pink-looking blotting paper, put it on top, and you used to absorb
right.
the ink like a sponge.
Pick up the extra, yeah.
Pick up the extra. Mm-hmm. It's like a tissue paper, you know? It just absorbs the water. So blotting paper gets wet very easily. Sponge gets wet very easily. Why? Because it has a lot of porous activity. Because the Atman is everywhere, mm-hmm. it cannot be wet. You cannot wet something that has no pores. I mean, imagine glass.
Right.
You take a glass table and you pour water on it, it'll stay on the surface.
Right.
It doesn't go inside. It doesn't mean the glass is wet on the top. Yeah, of
right.
course.
But the glass isn't affected.
It does not affect it. So right. that's similar to the Atman. Wind doesn't dry it. The same thing for drying. In order to dry, the water has to become water vapor and evaporate in order for it to dry. So since the Atman is all-pervading, that's what even in the Christian religion they say, I am everywhere.
Right.
In order for it to dry, the water has to become water vapor. If there's no space, no air for it to become water vapor, it can't dry. So right. that's what this means. Verse 24 is the exact same as 23. It's a repetition. It's all-pervading, stable, immovable, and ancient.
Mm-hmm.
This Atman is eternal. Now, if you look at the deeper interpretations, and they're available on YouTube, you have thousands of different swamis talk about the Gita and talk about verse 24, and you'll see that it is different. Because in verse 23, he talks about weapons. Cannot cut it. Then in verse 24, it says it's sort of indestructible,
mm-hmm.
meaning weapons are like old time. What is it? A weapons cannot cut it means
right.
a sword. But what if it is nuclear bomb in the future,
right.
the Gita may be thinking.
Yeah.
Well, somebody's going to say, well, swords didn't cut it, but I can blow it up by a nuclear thing. No, it says in verse 24, no, nothing can hurt it. The Atman is eternal, again, with time. Similar to before, but this is a much deeper interpretation of eternal, not limited by time, never born, never created, never destroyed, all pervading, not limited by space. Space cannot cut, stable, unchanging, not like a river. River, you may say, okay, this is there forever. I've seen this river since I was born. It's always been here.
Right.
Yes, it may be, but it's never the same. It's always changing because the water keeps flowing. Similarly, we change. The world changes. Every aspect of the world. Right. What doesn't change is the Atman. Motionless, since it is everywhere, doesn't move. The Atman never moves.
Right.
And verse 25 basically sums it all up. That was verse 24. Unmanifest, that means the real you is unmanifest. You are not an object of the senses. You cannot see it. You cannot hear it. It moves. It doesn't move. You cannot hear it, taste it, smell it, touch it. You can't even imagine it. You can't infer it. It's not an object, or you cannot even think about it. So it summarizes in verse 25 to say you are grieving about something or someone, and basically what it's saying is no one is at total peace. If you ask anybody, who's at total peace? Nobody. And people may say, I'm at more peace. But if you ask somebody, you say, I'm always at peace. I'm never bothered. That doesn't happen. So essentially, if you keep noticing that you are not a person, you're not the body, you're not the mind, you're not the intellect, you are Atman, and is unbothered by anything that happens around you, only then will you be at total peace. So this is an important brick that we have laid. Verses 11 to 25, it's basic, but in order to get to the next levels, we must learn this.
Can I try to summarize this from listening to it? It feels like these verses are trying to give us context. In other words, we're limited by our human perceptions. We see things changing. We see our bodies changing. We have our needs, have our desires. We see the beginning and ends of things. That's how we live. That's what we know. And to understand the Atman fully, we have to get beyond that. We have to see beyond what our total life experience is telling us. So we have to try to wrap our mind around something that's totally out of context for us. We don't understand it. Yeah.
And you're so right, because every one of us is at a different level, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, imagine a kindergartner, first grader, fourth grader versus somebody who's a PhD, right?
Right.
Everybody's at a different level. They all may look the same, but they're at different levels. People who are really high philosophers of the Gita, they just say it's not worth it. They just move to the Himalayas and they say, you know, I'm moving.
Yeah.
People who are totally uneducated with this, who are interested in finding out, as I start talking to them, the people who are PhDs have less patience for them. They say, I can't be bothered because this guy doesn't even know what the heck a mind is or a body is or an Atman is. I'm going to have to start at the very basics. Right. I'd rather teach somebody who's a little bit more ahead. So I'm just like a first grader.
Right.
I'm like a first grader here. I'm no PhD. I'm saying, okay, if I'm a first grader, there may be somebody that says, I'm interested in this, I want to learn, I'm in kindergarten.
Right.
I'd be happy to share my knowledge with you. And each time we learn, we go slightly higher. So you're right that this is the basics, that we have to get this grasp before we can move to the next level. And as we go higher, we learn more and more.
Because our tendency as humans is when we don't understand something or it's outside of our experience, we say, what the heck are you talking about? And we reject it. So this opens our minds to a concept that's not within our experience and say, well, okay, maybe you don't understand, but don't throw it away. Just go with the fact you don't understand it.
This takes us back to, I think, session one, the first session you and I talked about, Lou, where the British sent Governor General Warren Hastings to India to say, these people have no idea about religion. Just convert them all to a different religion.
Right.
And Warren Hastings said, okay, I'll do that. And he comes and he sits down with these high priests. And they said, before you do that, let us tell you what our scriptures are all about. And when he does that, he says, no, I can't do this because this is so valuable to humanity. And he converts it to English, translates it, becomes a worldwide bestseller. And some of the fathers of English literature and American literature have lived their lives with it. And I'm so glad that it didn't get destroyed because the earlier people who sent Governor Warren Hastings there didn't understand it and said, because I don't understand it, just what you were saying, just destroy it. Forget it. Walk away from it.
Well, it can't be destroyed because it's indestructible, even by thought, right?
The Atman is indestructible. Yes. This Gita, thank goodness it survived, which another point is that this Gita and all the other scriptures, Lou, was never written down until recently. It was always transmitted by mouth, by orally. That's why another reason why it's so cryptic, it's so short, because every word is important. And the people that started it basically took like a whole group of people, said every family is going to learn so many verses and know them forwards, backwards, forwards, backwards. And you must, it's your religion to keep passing this on to the next generation. If you go to India, even now, there are people that every morning, the children and grandchildren sit down and recite this forwards and backwards. They don't need a book for it. They know it. They may not know the whole Gita, but those verses that they were designed to be transmitted by them for eternity keep being repeated.
It's fascinating, and that need for people to come together to put the whole piece together is really a fascinating aspect of this as well.
Yep. All right, so thank you very much for listening. I appreciate it. Lou, thanks so much. Next week is Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So happy Thanksgiving to you, Lou, and to your family.
Yeah, you as well.
Okay. And people should go onto Facebook and YouTube and look at these and post their comments.
Right. Facebook and Apple Podcasts, the old iTunes. You can get the podcast there. Leave a review for us, please. It helps other people find us. Spotify, a number of places, SoundCloud, but the Facebook group, the Gita, Memoirs of a Psychiatrist, that's a place to get started.
Thank you so much. Have a nice week, friends.